Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, the Bucks have reported to rookie mini camp. We're going to talk about them as well as your mailbag questions today, all answered 100% correctly, or, and this is important, your money back. So let's start with the Bucks, and one in particular. How about Bucky Irving? Speaking of Bucks, the running back, of course, from the University of Oregon, is among those that will begin their sort of introduction, if you will, initiation to the NFL. They're here just for the weekend. They actually came in the building on Thursday, got some classroom work. They'll be on the field today and Saturday, and then back to school, presumably, I guess, for those that still have it. Listen, there's no pads on, none of that stuff happening. This is a, like I said, sort of an introduction. You get the playbook, you get an idea of what it's like to be in an NFL facility. You get to stare at yourself in the mirror with an NFL helmet on, all those things, which are cool. And there's a bunch of also undrafted rookie free agents that are there as well. So it's like a full mini camp, and they'll be playing some football on the grass. But I want to talk a little bit about Bucky Irving in particular. And nothing's going to be obviously determined in this weekend mini camp, but it is sort of a cattle call, if you will. Like, they've drafted these guys or signed these guys. Now they get them on grass. Now they get to see them. And Bucky physically is not that imposing when you look at him. He's 5'9". And you know, from a measurement standpoint, I think this is very fast, but by running back standards, maybe not. He ran a 4.56 40 yard dash. That's what the Bucks got him at the NFL combine. So that's why he lasted until the fourth round, because from a productivity standpoint, he was very, very good at Oregon. I mean, he was, you know, their main running back. We know how good Oregon was as a team. You know, he led them both running the football, receiving the football. I think he led the FBS in catches. He had like 50, 55, 56 catches, something like that. So he's really a three down back. You know, some people would take a guy like that and say, well, maybe we can use him on third down, which they certainly could. But more and more, you know, you have a guy whose strength is actually running through the first tackler. You know, he's very physical for a smallish guy. A little like the running back version of Steve Smith, if you will, who John Gruden used to call, you know, it's like a ball of barbed wire, you know what I mean? And that's sort of what Bucky Irving, I think, is going to be to the Bucks. What I think is interesting, Steve, is even though, you know, Rashad White has established himself as their starting tailback these last 2 years, and he had over 1,500 yards from scrimmage last year and was just 10 yards shy of 1,000. But his career average is 3.7, which is horrible, right? That's two seasons. That's his career average. Now, a lot of that has to do with the offensive line, the scheme. Well, you can say whatever you want, but I know Skip Pete, and he said this as much to us the other day, that, like, look, the best players are going to play. Now, it takes more than one. You can't get through a 17-game season really with just one running back. But he saw this play out in Dallas where he was a running back's coach. As Ezekiel Elliott was there and they brought in Tony Pollard, by Pollard's third year, Pollard ran for 1,000 yards and made the Pro Bowl, right? And Ezekiel was still the starter. So I think you're going to see a more equitable distribution of carries this year, and I think they'll also go with the hot hand. And if that becomes Bucky Irving, which I suspect he might actually make some big plays, then it'll be him.
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think, one, Rashad's averages in the past have looked bad because, as Liam Cohen pointed out, they were running the wrong scheme. They
yes,
were running
I agree.
Into bad defenses. They yep, weren't changing yep. play calls, et cetera.
Yep.
The offensive line looks like it's going to be better now. I mean, you know, you plan these things years in advance. You know,
sure
you kind of have a plan for your roster. Then Ryan Jensen gets hurt and Ali Marpet retires.
Yep.
That
yep.
shook up the interior part of your line.
For now about 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And now you've drafted more players and mm-hmm. continue to as you try to rebuild and beef up that interior line. So I think you're going to see a better effort out of Rashad or a yeah. chance to be better and improve yes. those numbers. But mm-hmm. it does take two running backs in the NFL today. You can't do it with one. Mm-mm. And if Liam Cohen is going to run the ball more like we expect him to, you're sure. going to need at least two backs. So mm-hmm. don't get caught up into who's RB1 and who's RB2.
Right.
Like you need one and 1A.
You do.
That's what you need in the NFL today. And Rashad and Bucky look Irvin. Different. I mean, they can complement each other some in their mm-hmm. styles, which is what you want too. You want two different types of backs so that
right.
you can do different things with each one, and the defense has to account for two different types of running backs, not one. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see what Bucky Irvin can bring, but don't get caught up into who's RB1. That doesn't matter right now
yeah.
because they're both going to play a lot.
I think so. And I also think that, you know, there's you make a good point, you know, about Rashad. There was two things that were kind of obviously affecting his production. One being the offensive line, which they've acknowledged now needed to get better. That's why they used their first round pick on Graham Barton. That's why they drafted a guard in the sixth round. That's why last year they drafted a guard in the second round. So they've tried to systematically rebuild that thing and, you know, move Tristan Wirfs to left tackle and so forth. And so, you know, football has not changed much since the game was invented. You have to move people. You have to be able to create, you know, creases and holes and things. But the other thing that hurt Rashad was his running style. He came out, he was very Le'Veon Bell-like in that he had this patient sort of pick your way, you know, to the hole and then accelerate style. And that might have served him well at Arizona State or other places he had been. Didn't help him up here, especially in sort of an outside zone scheme. Where, you know, you've got a bunch of linemen running one way and you got to kind of put your foot in the ground and go and sort of trust there's going to be a gap somewhere there for you to go. And about halfway through the season, because I had this conversation, I sat down one time one-on-one with Skip Pete and Rashad was not going very well. And I kind of talked to him about, you know, what was not happening, all that. And he said, you know, he said, look, I had to sit down with Rashad and tell him, You're a big back. I mean, he's 6 foot, 220 pounds. You know, this is not a smallish guy at that position at all. Mm-hmm. One of the bigger backs in the league with acceleration. And he said, you know, Rashad, you got to run violently. You have to run with more power, more, you know, none of this sort of tiptoeing through the hole stuff. Like you have to square your shoulders and put your foot in the ground and go and trust that those holes are going to be there. And they did some things. In terms of formationally, they kind of ran out of the pistol where Baker Mayfield was about 3 yards from the line of scrimmage instead of further back, and that got White to the line of scrimmage quicker, and that seemed to help a little bit. So they made some adjustments, and of course, the second half, I think the biggest thing was checking the ball down to Rashad because teams weren't covering it, and you know, you can absolutely complete 100% of what they don't cover, and then he's really good in space. We know that it's hard for the first guy to bring him down. I think he had more yards after contact than most running backs, if not all of them in the league last year. So as that happened, you know, things got going a little bit better the second half of the season. So it's not all on Rashad, no doubt about it. But it does take two. And what was such a disparity for most NFL teams was the fact that Rashad had 272 rushing attempts last year. You know who the number two guy was? Chase Edmonds. You know what I mean? He had 49. You just can't have a ratio of 272 to 49, you know? And so I absolutely think that's going to change. And in a way, there's no question it can help Rashad, because what happens when you're getting hit, you know, from the first series to the last quarter, and you're the only guy in the game, is you're wearing down, you know? And what you want to do is if you have a lead or if you have to run the football in the fourth quarter is have some fresh legs in the game that you can trust. And I think they're really going to like this Bucky Irvin guy. I mean, the more I watch him sort of on tape, going back and look at his Oregon film, he is a tough running back. And he is, you know, he knows how to get to the goal line. I think he's going to be good in the red zone. I think he's going to be great on third down. There's no situations. He's a complete back, even though he's smaller. But, you know, even Skip Pete, I mean, you have 4.56 or whatever they got him at. First of all, that's not slow, okay? Emmitt Smith was about a 4.56 guy. And I think Barry Sanders was more than a 4.4 guy. I mean, he didn't run 4.4 either. Now those are freaks, and they're the greatest running backs, you know, in the history of the NFL. But in that position, there's, you know, there's straight line speed in the 40, and then there's how fast you run the football, how quickly you get to the hole, can you make people miss, how instinctive that position is, more so than just the measurable. So. I'm looking forward to seeing him in person. You know, there's not going to be anything necessarily we can ascertain from a non-contact mini camp in 2 days, other than his hands, you know, his ability to cut and move and that sort of thing. Like I said, it's the underwear Olympics type deal. And Rashad won't be in this camp, but I think the other thing is competition. It pushes all of us, Steve. I mean, if you got a guy that's in your job, you know, doing it half the time, you want to make sure that, you know, you're doing your job the best. And so I don't think Rashad has been pushed these last couple of years or his first 2 years in the NFL. And I think you'll get a better Rashad White. So all this is going to be fun to see. Of course, you know, it's always, like I said, it's always great to see just sort of who they've drafted and see these guys in person, as well as, you know, some of the undrafted rookies that we've talked about. Another thing that won't happen in this camp, but these rookies will have an impact on it, is this new kickoff rule. And we can get into this another day, more detailed, but there's a new alignment to the NFL this season in terms of kickoffs. What it's going to result in are more returns. You're talking about 2,000 more football plays, right? Because they're going to incentivize the ball being kicked into the field of play as opposed to a touchback. Last year, about 1 in 5 kickoffs were even returned, right? And so they could have just started the game at the 25 and called it a day. With the new rules, the ball's still going to be kicked from the 35-yard line, and the returners will be back like they are as there is now. But the other 20 players are going to be positioned totally differently. You'll have 10 players on the kicking team going to line up at the opposing 40-yard line, and then at least 9 players from the return team have to line up between their own 35 and 30, right? So they're only 5 or 10 yards apart. And none of those guys on either side can move until the ball is actually caught. I think it's going to be fascinating. You're going to have to change sort of the personnel that you use in these plays, you know, because there's more one-on-one blocking. You could have some bigger bodies out there. And the return guys, you know, they've been using Devin Tompkins, who is fast, right? He's got a little bit of wiggle. You might want to look at a running back. You know, you might want to get a guy that's used to running through contact, because there's going to be some. And but there's also a greater chance for popping a guy and getting some kind of return out of it, which I think is going to make the game much more exciting. So these rookies this week, they probably necessarily may not line up in that formation. We'll see. They look at gunners and things like that on punt returns. But there's some real athletic bodies that I think that the Bucs could utilize in these new kickoff rules. And Thomas McGahee is a new special teams coach. And so he's got his work cut out with him, first learning the personnel and then trying to figure out, you know, where they're going to go. So it's going to be a couple extra interesting 2 days. We'll be out there both days. You can check out the coverage on TampaBay.com and in the Tampa Bay Times.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, since we started with football, we'll do some football questions here. Steve asks, with the Bucs signing all these speedy, diminutive receivers the past few years, when do you think Liam Cohen will install the run and shoot?
The run and shoot. What is that, Mouse Davis in Detroit, I think? I think Tom Moore had to tear that thing up. There won't be a run and shoot per se, right? Like, I don't see that occurring. Look, the ideal receiver these days, you're seeing receivers get bigger, not smaller. Speed is the great equalizer, though. So if you have a guy that can run, then that's obviously always preferred, right? But the Bucs receivers are what sort of what everybody wants, right? They're big, they're physical, they're fast, and they can get vertical if they need to. Now, I think, you know, in the case of Chris Godwin, he's going to move back inside to the slot where he sort of belongs. Maybe doesn't have the straightaway speed that a Mike Evans still has. But they've done some things, you know, in the draft. And the guy to watch is Jalen McMillan. And he's not a smurf either, right? He's not – this is not the, you know, the 80s or 90s Redskins or whatever they were back in the day, Washington football team. You know, Jalen is probably every bit of 6'1", maybe just under 200 pounds. But he's a terrific route runner, gets separation, can play inside or outside. I would imagine he'll play outside if Godwin's going to be predominantly the flanker or whatever. So I think you're going to like him. And for that matter, you know, most of the Bucs receivers are 6 feet or higher, to be honest with you, or very close to 6 feet. And that includes, you know, some of the rookies they drafted last year, like Trey Palmer, who can absolutely fly. Okay. So it's more about speed, verticality. You know, the rules favor the receivers these days because you can't have really contact with them, at least hard contact, before they have an opportunity to catch the football, you know, the old defenseless receiver penalty. And so that actually incentivizes teams to get guys that can go up and catch the football, right? Like jump ball type players, like Mike Evans is. And so the smaller wide receiver like a Devin Tompkins has trouble getting on the field these days. I'm not saying that's universal, but that's sort of the rules sort of favor you having bigger men. And, you know, the tight ends these days too are coming out of college. You know, they're not blockers anymore for the most part when they come out of college. These are guys that have caught a lot of footballs. And they're kind of like bigger receivers themselves. So whether it's the tight end or the wide receiver, I think the advantage goes to the big bodied guys. Still got to be able to run, but yeah, I don't see the run and shoot. I don't see smaller receivers taking over the game anytime soon. The rules just don't allow that right now, And everybody is looking for that guy that can do both, right? That can run and has a physicality to him, you know, and that's who's getting drafted, especially in the high rounds.
Ellis asked, with Twitter full of people talking about basketball players playing football and vice versa, which NBA team could use Mike Evans to get them over the top on a championship run?
You know, I thought of this because, you know, that was a topic all over the Twitterverse, I guess, and on some podcasts and things. And I don't know who said it or what exactly was said in terms of, you know, who couldn't do what. I think it would be much easier. And this is just my opinion. I don't know where the masses are falling on the argument. I think it would be easier for a football player to play basketball in terms of, you know, the violence and contact. You know, basketball is a collision sport. I'm sorry, it's a contact sport. It's not a collision sport. It's a contact sport. You have lots of contact, lots of physicality in basketball, but it's not a collision sport. Nobody is trying to take your head off. Nobody is you know, aiming somewhere between your knees and your head and trying to hit you as hard as they can and so that you won't go up for another pass. And so, however, when you look at a guy like Evans, I don't know if you have a chance to do this. Google or whatever the kids do these days, Mike Evans basketball, and you will see some of the damnedest athletic plays on a basketball court that you've ever seen. He had a chance, I believe this is true, he had a chance to play basketball at the University of Texas as well as football, and it was very tempting for him to do so, and he ended up going to Texas A&M and playing football. He really wasn't a football player until, I want to say, his junior year of high school. But his basketball tape is unbelievable. I mean, this guy was a Skywalker, as my friend Dick Vitale. He's a Skywalker, baby. He could really get up. And he played above the rim. You know, he's, what, 6'5". But the problem is the NBA doesn't have a lot of 6'5 guys they have some, but they're called like point guards usually. And I don't know if Mike could have done that. I don't know if he had the handles for that. But you're not gonna play in the low post at 6'5". That's for sure. Now, he could run the floor and do all those things. So, you know, football is one of those deals that his basketball ability, his ability to body people, block them out, elevate with those tremendous hands that he has, you know, honed through many hours of playing basketball and football. But like I said, he played mostly basketball his entire life. That's what's made him a great NFL receiver. And so, you know, football sort of found him, if you will. When we saw him at Texas A&M, it was, you know, jump ball after jump ball, right? Johnny Manziel won the Heisman Trophy because he could just elude pressure and throw it as far as he could and as high as he could to Mike Evans. What did Jameis Winston do for the first 5 years of his career? And so Mike's been a huge weapon in the NFL because of his basketball ability. He could absolutely ball. Like, you would not want to, like, if you're playing a pickup game anywhere in the universe and Mike Evans is standing on the sidelines, you want to pick him first. But I think it's much harder for somebody in basketball that hasn't played football. Football, you know, it's just not for everybody. I can't describe it. It's very painful to begin with. It's tedious, you know. There's a lot of sweat equity involved. You know, the practices are not fun. Like, when you practice basketball, you're pretty much playing the game. Everything else you do, you know, you're doing something in terms of playing the game. But in football, it's a lot of drills. There's contact, there's blocking, there's, you know, all this stuff. And you're not always, you're just preparing 6 days a week for those 3 hours on Sunday. Whereas, you know, you're playing games every day or every other day in the NBA or someplace else. So it's a different discipline and certainly totally different games. I don't know that, like, people have said, well, LeBron was a football player, right? He played tight end, I think, in high school. The tape is very good. He's a very physical guy, but maybe he could have done it because he played football. Mm-hmm. But in general, I think it'd be really difficult for most guys. Aren't you, if you're not used to that contact and playing in pads and playing with a helmet and surviving that, I think it'd be hard to do.
Boog asks, how's come no Buccaneer players roasted Tom Brady? It was a Patriot party.
It was, although they were there, right? Like, they were up on the dais, and it was a totally a Patriot party. And that might be because Tom Brady has declared himself forever a Patriot. And remember his retirement up there in New England, and he wore the Patriot jersey and said, I'll always be a Patriot. Bob Kraft was there. I did see Ed Glazer. I don't know if there were other Glazers in the audience, but I saw Ed, one of their co-owners. And he lives in L.A., so that makes sense. He was there, and it was at the L.A. Forum where the Lakers used to play. The weirdest thing for me was, okay, so we had Donovan Smith, who is now the Kansas City Chief, but, of course, was the left tackle for Tom when they won the Super Bowl. We had Ryan Jensen, who hasn't played in 2 years, but that was, you know, again, Tom's center and close guy that he was very much friends with when he was here in Tampa, and he was there. You had Lavonte David, who's, you know, the most iconic Buck that's currently on the roster and somebody that was extremely grateful to see Tom because he helped put a ring on his finger. And for that matter, it was the first time that Lavonte had even been to the playoffs. And then you had Breshad Perriman. Like, I don't know how, why. Did Mike Evans give his ticket to Breshad? Like, I got to believe Mike was invited, right? Like, you had all these other receivers up there, Randy Moss and, of course, all the Patriot receivers, but I'm not sure. It was an eclectic group of Buccaneers, none of whom really got up there and roasted him. I don't know if any of those guys are really good at telling jokes. I would imagine maybe Jensen could have told a few. But, yeah, they were not written into the program. So it was clearly a Patriot night, and that kind of makes sense. They did mention him winning a Super Bowl, you know, with the Bucs a couple times. But, yeah, nobody roasted them. Maybe those guys aren't that funny. I don't know. But they didn't write any jokes for them, that's for sure.
All right, we'll switch to the Rays. And Ryan asked, how much longer do we have to watch Jose Siri and Aaron Civale in a Rays uniform?
Civale, I think, for the rest of the year, unless, you know, some guys come back up into the rotation and supplant him somehow. But he's a starting pitcher as far as I know. And he's had, you know, obviously some shaky outings. Some good, some bad. I mean, it, you know.
Actually, if he only pitches four innings, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
That fifth inning, it's a problem.
They can't push him, yeah. So maybe what they do is maybe bring in an opener and then let him become a middleman or something like that. I don't know. I don't know exactly what they're going to do. I was never a big Aaron Civale guy. I didn't think that that was a great signing for them. People in baseball I know that cover this sport, and I'm not talking about Mark here since we just did a podcast with him, but other people I know never thought he was really that good. But listen, I mean, look at the, you know, the injuries this staff has had over the last 2 years until they get some of those guys back. And hopefully some will be back before the season is over, you know, after the All-Star break, or maybe before in some cases. That could change sort of the roles a little bit. With respect to Suri, Steve, I'm just about ready to say that that's played out. You know, like, mm-hmm. I know he has tools, right? And he certainly had a good statistic year last year. Probably hit way more home runs than I thought he was capable of. Certainly has the speed to play center field, although sometimes I think he Cadillacs it a little bit too much out there and, you know, might handcuff a ball or two. But I don't know that says – he doesn't say to me – and look, it's a big bar to get over after Kevin Kiermaier, but Suri does not feel like to me the guy that's going to play center field for them much longer. And, in fact, he isn't already, right, because Johnny DeLuca sort of, you know, helped mm-hmm. take that over.
And you got Palacios that plays outfield. Palacios
plays some outfield.
Especially as you have infielders starting to come back.
Yeah, and you got to have to play more than one position, right, to give them a little bit of flexibility there. I don't think he's going to be long for this team. When I say not long, I don't know. I don't know if he'll make it through this season. I don't know if he has options. Strikes out way too much of late, or pretty much all season. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think Suri is here for the long term?
A lot of times these things tend to work themselves out.
That's true.
You know, the Rays are starting to get a lot of players back from injury, but that doesn't mean others aren't going to go on the injured list. So we'll see. Yeah. I mean, the Rays don't like to get rid of depth.
That's true, because then somebody gets hurt, and then where are you?
Right. Yeah. He's still a tremendous defensive center fielder, although, like you said, sometimes I think he takes some plays off here or there, or nights off.
Yeah.
But they traditionally don't like to get rid of depth unless it's getting them other depth. Is there someone that needs a defensive center fielder that you can get some pitching help for?
Something for him, yeah.
Or, you know, that, then yes. But otherwise, you know, they'll try to find a way to keep him.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. I mean, that's, you know, his stock isn't that high right now, I wouldn't think.
That's the other thing, yeah. If you're not starting for you, why would you think that
you'd
have any value, you know?
But, you know, they will give the playing time to the best players. And if Johnny DeLuca stays hot, if they need to find a place for Richie Palacios because he's continued to produce when Brendan Lau and Taylor Walls and those guys come back,
yeah.
You know, and if Jonathan Aranda is called up, I mean, you know, also you do have a crunch, and that's our next mailbag question actually kind of talks about.
Okay.
You know, there's going to be a positional crunch at the race, so what do they do? So I can get into that. John asked. He says, in my humble opinion, Taylor Walls was the best fielding infielder in Major League Baseball until he got hurt. I'm talking third base, second base, and shortstop. But here we are. Is he coming back this season? And if so, who does he replace? Same for Aranda and Brendan Lau coming back. Who do they replace? Good problems, but still some tough decisions, no?
Yeah, I mean, good problems, sure. I don't know how happy I am with the shortstop position defensively right now, if you're the Rays. I mean, I think we've seen, as the season has gone on, things started out very well. First of all, they're not a good defensive team in general. You would agree, Steve, that this is not the DNA that we're used to with the Rays?
Not right now.
Yeah. Now, again, you mentioned the injuries, so that's a big part of it, right?
Now, you want to get better defensively, you put Taylor Walls at shortstop immediately.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But then, you know, do you want Jose Caballero in the lineup still?
Yeah, maybe. But where does, you know, then he has to play third. Then what do you do with Parady? Like, you know, but Ahmed Rosario, I think surprising bat, a lot of infield hits. I think he's got 11 infield hits, really good speed. But the last 2 weeks, he still made some really outstanding plays, but I'm starting to see a little bit of leakage. I'm starting to see, you know, the plus play that you need a major league shortstop to make, he's not always making. And some of those have even probably gone for base hits or whatever, but I don't know over the course of 162 games, you're going to look at him and go, that's a major league shortstop that starts every day. I don't know.
The hard part that the Rays are going to have is if you get all these guys back healthy and if everybody stays healthy.
Yeah.
It's easy to take a Caballeros out of the lineup and put Taylor Walls there for defense.
Mm-hmm.
If Randy and Yandy are hitting. When your big guys aren't hitting, how do you take the productive bats out of the lineup to improve your defense? And it's been a struggle for them this year, I think. How do you take Rosario's bat out of the lineup? How do you
Well, you can't, because they would be nowhere without them. Now, as you get, you know, as the Yandy Diaz's come around or Randy's.
If they do.
If they do. Now, if they don't, yeah, I don't think you can. They're your best hitters right now.
Mm-hmm. But if Randy starts heating up and Yandy, and it looks like they're starting, we'll see if they get there.
You've already got Josh Lowe doing some things.
Mm-hmm. But once you start getting bats back, then it's easier to go, okay, I can put Taylor Walls at shortstop. I can go down a little bit offensively there to improve my defense tremendously.
Yeah, yeah.
But it sticks out this year because they are one of the worst teams fielding in baseball, but it's also because the bats aren't producing.
That's
true.
The
big bats aren't. And so everything is magnified.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of times these decisions work themselves out. Somebody else gets hurt.
Yeah.
Whatever. But they are going to have a glut at some point. And it's a good problem to have, and maybe they can trade it for some pitching depth or
that's true.
Pitching help or
left-handed bat or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's we'll see. I mean, if Aranda can come up here and produce, Brendan Lau's coming back. We know he's good defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he can get hot at all, we'll see. Taylor Walls, the best fielding infielder in the system for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have options. And at some point, someone's going to have to get moved out, whether it's optioned to Durham or traded.
Right.
But those are good problems to have.
Yeah. Champagne problems for sure. But you're going to have to have better defense. I don't think they can score enough runs. And certainly they're not hitting the long ball with any regularity like they did, you know, a year ago. So that part of their game has disappeared. I don't know how they're going to spackle it together. And it would also be interesting to see as we do this podcast on Thursday afternoon, just sort of how they line up against these AL East teams they're going to face here in the next few series.
The next 2 weeks are going to be very telling.
Yeah, the Yankees and the Red Sox and Orioles. And, you know, you don't have that many games against them, so they kind of are magnified a little bit in terms of, you know, making hay in that division. So I think that's going to say a lot, too. You know, when you see them pitted against the AL East. So we'll find out a lot about these players. But so far, the Jose Caballeros and the Rosarios and guys like that have all been huge contributors on both sides. And so they're certainly earning their paychecks. And then we don't know, of course, it's much, much more nebulous is what's going to happen with, you know, a Wander Franco. You can't count on that at some point. But the defense has been glaringly absent from this baseball team. They're just sort of holding on. And that also includes outfield play, by the way. You know, because Suri, when Suri's out there, he's a plus outfielder, still kind of, you know, doesn't always hustle and got taken out of game for that.
You also have a lot of guys playing out of position, too.
Yeah, Randy's playing some center. Outfield.
Palacios playing some infield.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you got some guys playing. Now, that's not the – I mean, like you said, Suri's had some issues, and that's not the only reason the defense has been struggling. But
right.
It is part of it.
And they put DeLuca out there, and everybody was cutting off fly balls to him. It's crazy. It's like, hey, man, you're the new guy. You don't get to catch these, even though you're a center fielder. It was weird. But but the defense has to get better for this team to to advance. It goes hand in hand, right? Pitching and defense. That's sort of always going to be what wins in baseball over the long haul anyway.
Craig writes, we know the Rays have a big vote in June for a new stadium. We know soon the Bucks will need a new stadium. The use of public funds seems to be less desired than ever. How much did the Marlins stadium and lying about losing money haunt the Rays and the Bucks?
I think the Marlins thing is a scary tale. in terms of maybe location and other things, and maybe just the haste in which it was done. I don't know, because I'm not at all ingrained in how that stadium came about, where it is, et cetera. I know this. There was, as we do this podcast, there was a big discussion, I think, going on with St. Pete City Council, the mayor who has been behind this project, the developers they chose. There's some real problems with this. And I don't know that there, you know, there's any more headwinds necessarily. I'm not trying to, you know, predict doom and gloom, like some of my friends in the media do on a daily basis. But I do think that, you know, shovels in the ground is what you want to see. I also think it's fair to be critical of this deal from the city stand, if you're on the city side of things, and that did they give too much away, right? Is this really, from a development side, something that, you know, the city could have benefited more from the way it's constructed? And I'm not going to get into the nuance, but there's been some pretty good threads on Twitter and other places that you can read. And I just don't think it's as much a slam dunk as everybody had hoped it would be, or it would be done by now, and we'd see shovels and all of that stuff, and it hasn't happened. The one thing that's undeniable, Steve, is that for years, from time immemorial, almost, we've heard that the Trop is not the place to put a major league stadium for the Rays, and so many reasons why that was true. Now, things have changed post-COVID. The city of St. Petersburg has certainly changed. There's a booming, you know, population center rising up all around it. But other things, you know, have remained the same. And they're talking about building the new stadium in essentially this exact same area. Like I said, there's been a lot more development and more development to come, and which will certainly help the Rays and the city, perhaps, a little. And that's sort of been the public-private development way that stadiums like the Atlanta Braves and others have built. But it's still St. Petersburg. And I was born in St. Petersburg. I love St. Petersburg. I live in Tampa now. But I still wonder if you're not just sort of, you know, finding another way to justify a bad location for that stadium. I really don't know. And I don't want to do a stadium story. It's a great question. But that Marlins thing is scary in a way, you know? And I've been down there. I don't like where they put that ballpark necessarily.
It's definitely the wrong location.
Yeah.
Especially for baseball.
Right, right.
When you have 81 dates a summer.
Right.
And 7 straight days a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you need to be where the businesses are.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, football stadiums you can put just about anywhere.
Yeah, you're playing once a week, people will come.
Yeah, and most of them are on Sundays. And,
right, right.
You know, heck, Boston's is in Foxborough.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, granted, that's been there a long time.
But it's one road in, one road out. The traffic ain't good there either. Right. Yeah.
Right. Football's different. But as you get to hockey and basketball, which are 41 nights over the winter,
yeah,
and then baseball, which is 81 over the summer, like, yeah, the location does matter. Now, is this the best deal the Rays could get anywhere in the area?
It seems as though it was.
Probably, considering that they control a lot of the rights for the whole mixed-use development part, right, too. It's not just the stadium for them.
Right. That's what attracted them to this deal. Mm-hmm.
That's what all of a sudden makes that site more appealing.
Desirable, right.
Because you're going to control all that.
It's what desirable it to the Rays, the but is it any more desirable to the fans?
If there's more entertainment, if there's more of this, potentially.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's done right, and it'll be a lot more than just a baseball stadium there.
Sure.
Which,
sure,
will also drive, in theory, drive traffic,
revenues, and people, and real estate
year-round, not just during the summer.
Taxes and all that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from the bars and restaurants and shops and everything else they do there.
Yeah.
You know, that's your hope.
Right.
You know, the other thing is we know the Bucks are probably looking at a new stadium, or at least major renovations to Ray J.
Yeah.
And those discussions, I'm sure, have started already.
Absolutely.
Behind closed doors.
Internally, if not both externally. And yeah, mm-hmm. no, I, I can tell you, I mean, the shelf life of those stadiums, you know, stunningly have been about 20, 25 years. Mm-hmm. You know, they've tore down the Georgia Dome and built a whole new stadium in Atlanta.
Yep.
And it was 20 years old. And you can see while they put, I think the Bucks said they put $160 million into Raymond James to upgrade a lot of the club areas and sky suites and this and that. The rank and file people are still sitting on very hard red seats and getting roasted, you know, for 3 of the 4 months out of the year. What they need, and no one's going to be excited about this, is a dome, you know, or at least an air-conditioned, you know, stadium. It's not going to be retractable because those are not cost-effective, in my opinion. I think it would more likely resemble something they have in Minnesota for the opposite reason, which is at U.S. Bank Stadium, you know, mostly glassed encased, where you get natural light coming beaming through there, but you have a roof over your head. You know, you'd love to be able to do what they did in L.A. with the various breezeways and still have sort of a, you know, an awning type top over it, but it's still too hot and humid. You know, that's not the case in Los Angeles, which is, you know, out in Inglewood right by the Forum. So I would agree with you, though. Like, I believe, and I don't have any proof of this, but if I'm Hillsborough County or I sit on one of those commissions, before I would, you know, try to cut some sweetheart deal for the Braves, I would know what was coming down the pipeline with the Bucks, mm-hmm. Because they're more of a legacy franchise. The NFL is still king, and they've had the Bucks, you know, since inception, and they have a lot of land that we know. You know, the Bucks built this current stadium, you know, where the old sombrero wasn't, and then, you know, well, I'm sorry, not where the old sombrero was, where the Reds training facility was. And then I think the opposite would be true. They'd have to, you know, build it back on this area to the south there, perhaps, you know, because they have so much land, and now the Yankees are involved with some of that property. So, but however it's done with whatever lands or public financing, yeah, I'm surprised we haven't had something publicly like leak out there yet. If I knew about talks, I would report them. I'm not saying that there's anything to report, certainly. And in a sunshine law state, we would have some of that conversation at some point. But if you don't think it's happening, at least in the buildings, you know, over there at the Advent Healthcare Center, you're crazy, because what else would they be concerned about in terms of their franchise? And maybe they think they can do one more Super Bowl here, you know?
I don't see them getting another Super Bowl.
Well,
the only reason they got the one in 2020
got
was because
of
the
COVID.
Rams Stadium. No, it was the Rams Stadium.
It wasn't completed,
had delays.
Right.
And so
that's
right. The NFL's rule is you cannot host a Super Bowl in the first year a stadium's open. They had to delay the stadium open to 2020.
But they bailed out the NFL with sort of an understanding that, hey, we know we're not being fair to you. It's not a real Super Bowl. We will revisit your candidacy another time, and this will weigh heavily in you guys bailing us out, which is what they did. They put on a Super Bowl with very little time relative to what they usually take, years and years. So I don't know. Maybe they'll throw them an IOU. I don't know.
I would see more likely they would get a draft or a combine if they move that. Then I just don't see Raymond James being.
You don't think they're going to host another one?
The amount of new stadiums out there? No, I do not.
Yeah,
I could be wrong, but.
Well, what are the new one? What are the new ones now that still have yet to have a Super Bowl?
No, it's not the yet. I mean, they're going to go back to Vegas. They're going to go back to L.A. They're going to.
Well, I think, yeah, I think L.A. is going to be a very regular rotation, as it, you know.
Chicago's about ready to start trying to build a new stadium. They'll get one.
Yeah. I could also see, and this is further down the pike, but I could also see them eventually having Super Bowls abroad. I still think that's a possibility.
People
will rail against it, but I don't think it's out of the question.
The hard part, like, I know London is an option. If you're going to keep the Super Bowl at 6:30 on a Sunday night, now you're talking midnight London time. That doesn't work.
Right.
So they'd have to, at that point, adjust some things. Now, you know, could the NFL move the kickoff time for that Super Bowl? Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But would that hurt U.S. television ratings? Maybe not.
Yeah. All right, we had more lightning questions and some mailbag stuff. We'll get to those early next week, but you can send those questions in anytime. You don't have to wait for a mailbag call. You do that by sending them to us at NFL Stroud or at SportsDayTB. You can also reach me by email at rstroud@tampabay.com. It's Rays against the Yankees, the Evil Empire in town, and, of course, Buccaneers minicamp beginning today over at the Spectrum Healthcare Center, and I will be out there. Check out all the coverage in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great weekend, everybody.